Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Is the internet rewiring our brains? With an increased reliance on the internet, smartphones, and social media, technology is intersecting with daily life at a higher rate than ever before. But what has all of this cyber multitasking done to our minds? Overusers of the internet and other technologies have increased rates of depression, anxiety, and trouble focusing. Recent studies have attempted to measure this impact on the human mind. Joining us today is Dr. Gary Small. He's director of the Longevity Center at UCLA. He's the author of several books, including iBrain, Surviving the Technological Alteration of the Modern Mind, and also co-author of the Alzheimer's Prevention Program. Welcome to the show, Dr. Small.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Small, in 2008, your team conducted research on 24 web users to see what effect being plugged in had on the brain. Some were experienced and others were new to the internet. The makeup of their brains was different. The research also showed similarities between the brains of internet users and those addicted to drugs and alcohol. Tell us about the results.
Well, it's really quite startling. We found a huge difference in brain activity when experienced internet users searched online compared to those who were naive to the experience. In fact, more than a twofold increase in activity. Now, both the naive and the experienced users, or the internet savvy individuals, understood the material. They absorbed the information, but there was more brain activity going on in those who had prior experience, suggesting that we can exercise our brains just by simply searching online. And we followed that up with another study where we found if we took the internet-naive people and we had them search online for just an hour a day for a week, we saw significant increases in activity in the front part of the brain, the thinking brain, the part of the brain that makes decisions and controls short-term memory, the kinds of mental tasks that are essential to search online.
So that's good.
Well, it is good, and it suggests that, and it's actually consistent with what we know about the brain, that the brain is sensitive to any kind of stimuli from moment to moment, and the more time we spend with a certain mental experience, the stronger will become the neural circuits controlling those experiences. Now, the downside is when we overdo it. Too much of a good thing is not necessarily good for the brain. And I think we all know from our own experience that all the multitasking is actually detracting from our quality of life rather than enhancing it.
But is it changing our brains?
Well, I think it probably is. There's not been extensive study of that, what's actually going on in the brain, but there have been some studies. For example, there was a recent study of individuals who were deemed internet addicted. So they spent a lot of time on the internet, and they found that the same parts of the frontal lobe that control decision-making, that help with short-term memory, actually were smaller in those who are internet addicted compared to those who were not. So it suggests that it can shut down parts of the brain if we overdo it.
How do you, for the sake of your research, define internet addicted?
Well, in this research study, they used a special questionnaire that included statements that would be consistent with any form of addiction. You know, do you feel better if you do it more? Do you miss it if you're not on the internet? Do you daydream about it? Is it possibly interfering with your everyday life? Those kinds of questions. So I really think that people can be addicted to technology in the way they may be addicted to food or to cigarettes. Now, certainly, it's not the kind of addiction you'd get if you were taking heroin or if you were an alcoholic. But there are a lot of similarities in terms of these behaviors interfering with people's lives.
We're talking with Dr. Gary Small. He's director of the Longevity Center at the Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior at UCLA. If you have a question or comment for him, we're talking about internet addiction, the impacts and internet use, the pros and the cons, I suppose, for our brains. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. In a chemical sense, does the sedentary lifestyle of an internet addict play into this at all? The fact that they're not getting out and getting exercise and fresh air and that sort of thing, or is that just way too simplistic?
I don't think it's simplistic. I think it is another negative contribution. We know that people who spend a lot of time online or with technology are not exercising as much, and they're going to gain weight, and they're going to be at risk for all kinds of weight-related illnesses. We have a worldwide epidemic of overweight and obesity, and it causes tremendous problems in the long term. It increases the risk for Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, hypertension, all kinds of issues that are not going to be good for your brain.
So what do we know about how the brain has adapted to new technologies in the past, say television, radio, that sort of thing?
Well, the brain is a very resilient organ. So, you know, one could argue, hey, my mom or my grandma told me television would rot my brain, and it never did. And I've even heard myself shouting to my son, who was playing too many video games. I said, Harry, get off that video game and come down and watch television with me.
Right.
But it's complicated because, you know, my concern about overuse of technology is that it interferes with human contact skills, talking to someone, looking them in the eye, noticing nonverbal cues. Now, when I complained to my son, I didn't realize that he was playing a video game with his friends online. So there was some kind of social interaction.
Yeah, that online video game playing, that's a whole different ball of wax, really.
Well, it's different. I mean, you're right. I think we tend to oversimplify and say technology is one thing and offline is another thing. And there's a lot of different subtleties to the experiences. You have to look at the content, the context, the quantity of exposure. And in fact, with video games, there has been a study that found that when young people played a violent video game, it interfered with their ability to recognize the emotional expression on a face.
You, as I said earlier, you're co-author of a book called The Alzheimer's Prevention Program. What is there any kind of relationship between preventing Alzheimer's or improving memory? Well, you've mentioned improving memory, but what about something like Alzheimer's?
Well, I think there's interesting opportunities. So when we think about technology and Alzheimer's, because what are we doing with all this technology? We spend a lot of time searching and gathering information. We're not memorizing. So in a way, the World Wide Web has become an external hard drive that can augment our memory stores. And I think this can be an opportunity to help people, maybe not with full-blown Alzheimer's dementia, but people with milder memory problems, to use the internet, to use their computers to help them compensate for their memory challenges. Essentially, the Alzheimer's Prevention Program has two components. One component has to do with keeping your brain cells healthy. It alludes to what we were talking about earlier, not sitting around so much, getting physical exercise, eating right, lowering stress levels. The other component has to do with compensating for memory loss, so learning memory techniques. And we can teach that with computer programs, with different applications and downloads. And we can also help people perfect their technology skills so their memory is better.
Jessica in Columbus, you're on the air with Dr. Gary Small. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you.
What's your question?
My question is, how do you think that the increase in technology is affecting children? Have you done any studies on that? Because as a concerned parent of a 9-year-old, I see that it's affecting things such as his attention span, his human interactions. I feel like he has this pull to cell phones and, you know, handheld video games and the internet, and I don't know how to break him free of it.
I'm tremendously concerned about this. A young person's brain is very sensitive to technology, to any kind of exposure. And in fact, young people are spending the most time with the technology. The Kaiser Family Foundation counted up the amount of time an average 8 to 18-year-old spends with their technology, and they came up with 11 and a half hours a day, and that's not including school time with the technology. So there are concerns not only expressed by you, but by pediatricians and health officials, and there's a recommendation to try to limit the technology time in young people so that it doesn't interfere with attention, so they do learn human contact skills, face-to-face conversation skills.
There has been some connection drawn between high-tech immersion. And by the way, Jessica, thanks for your call. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Thank you.
Between high-tech immersion and ADD. Attention deficit disorder.
Most of the studies have not looked at computer use, but
okay.
video, watching videos or watching television. And mm-hmm. the conclusion from these studies is there is an association between worse symptoms of ADHD or attention deficit and greater exposure to the technology. In fact, there's a correlation with doing worse in school. Now, the criticism of the studies is that they don't prove a cause and effect relationship. So some people will argue that individuals or young people with ADHD are more drawn to the technology. However, it concerns pediatricians so much that their national organizations have recommended no technology for children under two.
For children under two? I mean, people, when you say no technology, you mean no television?
That's right.
Okay.
I mean, that's the extreme view. Not everyone agrees with that.
Uh-huh.
And I think you're going to see a range of kids. Some kids are more seem more sensitive to it. Others seem less sensitive.
I was at an Apple store the other day, and they have a whole table set up just for kids. You know, it's low, so, you know, you'd hear my knees cracking if I tried to use it even. And they have the iPads out, and these kids were just immersed. And I'm talking about 4, 5, 6-year-old kids.
Now, the upside is they're wiring their brains to become tech wizards. The downside is that their brains are developing. 60% of their connection sites between their brain cells are pruned away from birth through adolescence. Their empathy skills, so teenagers are not as empathic as middle agers. And their frontal lobe skills, the ability to reason, to solve complex problems, to think ahead, those skills are still forming through adolescence. So the question is, with all this high-tech immersion during this critical developmental stage, how will their brains change? What will the 40-year-olds 20 years from now seem like? Will they be less empathic? Will they be less able to solve complex problems?
Are you going to keep studying this?
I would like to. I think it's an interesting area, and it's actually one that it is understudied. There is not a lot of government funding going in this area, and I think one of the problems is that it's so fast and furious. The technology changes from moment to moment. We're so busy answering our email, we're not able to study it.
Well, thanks for talking and taking the time to talk with us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dr. Gary Smalley is director of the Longevity Center at UCLA. He's also the author of iBrain, Surviving the Technological Alteration of the Modern Mind. Coming up, we're going to hear from a psychologist about these same issues. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Support our station right now and register to win an iPad. Our fall membership drive begins soon, and by making your pledge before the start of the drive, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad. No pledge is necessary, but your support continues to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org, so make your pledge and get registered. Thanks for supporting 89.7 NPR News. 63 degrees with a few clouds, and there's a chance of rain later today, a high of 71. Rain is likely overnight tonight, a low of 45 degrees. Rain Saturday morning, and then some sunshine, a high of 57. Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, thanking WOSU and others who make Columbus a smart and open community. At the Columbus Foundation, personal service and community pride combine to help donors help others through impactful philanthropy, big or small. It's here that history resounds and opportunity abounds. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
In a world saturated with Twitter and Facebook and smartphones, the internet, YouTube, the race to absorb information electronically may have damaging effects on the mind, particularly for young children. Joining us now to talk about the psychological effects of technology is Pauline Wallen. She's a psychologist and past president for the Media Psychology Division of the American Psychological Association. Welcome to the show, Pauline.
Hello.
The Media Psychology Division studies patterns of media use and effects on the mind, but it hasn't always been around. When did it come to be, and was it related to the internet?
Actually, the Media Psychology Division started with promoting psychology in the media and how the media were portraying psychologists and the field of psychology. But we, about 20 years ago, we started adapting technology. And so you mentioned that it was the internet or the connectivity was harming children's minds.
Well, it may have.
May have. Well, you know, we have this thing called the Flynn effect where kids' IQ scores just keep rising every few years.
So it puts kind of the kibosh on that when it comes to straight out scoring on intelligence. But are there other things besides intelligence that can be affected?
Well, anything that people do habitually is going to affect them. You know, so we see brain changes with a lot of internet use. Well, you would see brain changes when you engage in any kind of repetitive behavior.
Okay. Is there a sense that there is a problem with overuse of the internet?
Oh, yes, there is. And, we do tend to rely on the technology. It is so easy to, it's so convenient. It's right there. It's in our pocket. So, yes, it's, and sometimes it's not an addiction. It's kind of like, for example, if I do a lot of writing and I'm about to write, well, first I'll check my email because it gives me something to do instead of what I'm supposed to do. So sometimes going on the, texting and checking email, playing a video game is a way of avoiding what you have to do or what what you need to do.
To what extent is this just part of the problem we have overall of multitasking, overextending ourselves, just putting too much on our plate in general?
Well, with the, with the convenience of the connectivity, our expectations are much higher now that when you go on vacation, you're supposed to be in touch, expected to have your cell phone with you. It's very hard to unplug. In fact, about a year and a half ago, there was a study where 1,000 students around the world in I think 10 countries unplugged for one day, and they had a terrible time.
Yeah, just one day.
Yes.
Which that meant that they were going without their phone, without their computer, without television?
Yes, and they wrote there in their journal, and so one said, I have no idea what to do with my time. Another wrote, I had this amazing visit with my parents.
And likewise, maybe I had this amazing visit with my kids.
We have become quite dependent on the technology.
And, the technology's not going away. So it's a matter of how are we going to cope with this and what's a healthy relationship that we can have with the technology?
Right, right. So it's not the technology itself that it's addicting. It's how we use it. And people use the technology for different purposes. Some people use it to play games. Some people use it to communicate with others, going on Facebook or checking their email or shopping. So it's not one type of addiction or addictive behavior, but we do, because it's so convenient and available, we tend to use it as our default activity.
The cover of Newsweek last week was Eye Crazy, Panic, Depression, Psychosis, How Connection Addiction is Rewiring Our Brains. First of all, how do we define connection addiction? Do you know what the tipping point is for something like that? Because we're all on it at some point every day
because
of work and just life.
I guess there's even a disagreement about whether it's actually an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a habit for sure, but I did see that Newsweek article, and this week Time had a rejoinder to that.
What was that?
Just pointing out some studies that the author was overreacting and citing case studies instead of, just as examples, which can lead you into something called confirmation bias, that the tendency to seek out information that confirms what you already believe. We see that in the political arena all the time.
Right. We have read, it's been said, daily use of the internet and other media has led to increased rates of depression and anxiety, particularly among youth. And we were just talking to Dr. Gary Small at UCLA, who said, well, the question is it a correlation or is it a causation issue?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we've had an increase in depression and anxiety before the internet. Dr. Martin Seligman noted this maybe 10 years ago, before Web 2.0, where people were connecting on Facebook and all of that stuff. And he had cited information from the previous 20 years. So the incidence of depression is increasing, and it may be that more depressed people use the internet more.
Mm-hmm.
You can get into trouble when you confuse correlation and causation. Have you ever seen that thing on the internet, The Dangers of Bread?
No.
Oh, well, did you realize that the majority of violent crimes are committed within 24 hours after eating bread?
Right.
And half of children in bread-eating households have an IQ below average. Because all kids have, half of all kids have an IQ, because IQ is the average, it's based on averages. But it's very alluring to see two things occurring together, and then assuming that one causes the other, where in fact it can be a third variable, such as after World War II, in Sweden, in Stockholm, the number of storks increased along with the high increasing birth rate. So, of course, the real underlying reason was that they had built more apartment buildings, and the storks were nesting on the apartment buildings.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Pauline Wallin. She's a psychologist and past president of the Media Psychology Division of the American Psychological Association. We're talking about internet and addiction. Do the two ever meet? Can you be addicted, or is it just a bad habit? And what does it mean in terms of the development of our brains? The social media explosion. Have online social interactions, and really this has only been in the last few years. I don't even know how you study something so recent, but it's so prevalent, so ubiquitous, that how can you not question what the impact is on the way children and families communicate outside of the virtual world?
Yes. Well, the social media interaction is actually an advantage for people who are socially awkward or shy, who have poor social skills, because it gives them a chance to interact in a safer environment.
Mm-hmm. So it's not
it's
all
not
bad.
All bad. No.
Once again, can it be bad, though?
Well, anything can be bad in excess, yes.
Okay.
I saw a photograph this week of a couple hugging. It was a side view, so you could see both of them, and each were looking over the other's shoulder at their cell phone while they were hugging.
Uh-huh. Has there been an increase, or do we have any sense about how often people are bringing their kids in to a therapist saying, I can't get them off the games, I can't get them off the internet, what do I do, is there something wrong with them?
Okay, I haven't done a survey of therapists, but in my office, the game playing or staying on the internet is kind of a side issue, where they usually bring the kid in because he's not doing his homework, mm-hmm. or he's not sleeping, or they're getting into fights over the screen time and those kinds of things. But they rarely, to me anyway, bring in their child as the internet is the primary problem.
I just read another, just a little bit of a story about another guy who killed his mom because she wanted him to quit spending money on the games on the internet. And he killed her and took her card and started playing more games, took her credit card and that kind of thing. Is that psychosis they're talking about, or is that not, once again, a correlation, not a causation question?
That's somebody who has serious problems to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And the screen time did not cause that person to kill his mother.
Are you concerned as a psychologist about how little we really do know about the physiological effects of, you know, the online, the technology as it's developing, that we don't know really what the effects are?
Well, I guess we had the same concern with television, with radio, mm-hmm. even dating back to books. You know, they thought that,
right.
you know, so yes, I am concerned, but I'm not afraid. I think we'll probably settle into integrating technology into our lives just like we did with TV.
If a parent comes to you and says, I'm worried about my kid, how do you counsel them on how to judge what is too much?
Well, too much is, I guess, defined by the family, but a child that whose world revolves around the screen needs to get out and do more, just to have more options in his experience, and to, as Gary said earlier, getting, you know, having their brain develop in using with social interaction skills and social skills.
What about online learning? I think I would have a very difficult time learning online. Of course, I use the internet all the time for my work. But as far as taking a class, I tend to respond better to the one-on-one, but the kind of the Socratic method where you're talking about things.
Yes, and I guess that is, you know, much more, you're focusing better in a classroom or one-on-one on the computer. When you're online learning, there's a lot of interruptions when you're checking your email real quickly and those kinds of things. But I haven't looked up the studies on the, you know, the success or the impact of online learning, whether people learn better or what kind of people learn better online.
Are there positive psychological ramifications to using the internet and being online and playing the games and that sort of thing?
Well, I think there was a small study of surgeons those who had played video games were better surgeons, you know, as a teen. But, you know, we have now these apps, and even though being online or being connected all the time is maybe seen as a detriment,
mm-hmm.
There are apps like to monitor your heart rate, to keep track of calories, your mood, and that's very helpful because that kind of feedback helps us monitor our own behavior.
So it's not a good idea to just jumble all technology together as one.
Right. Because there are so many different types of technology and so many different ways to use it. And some people are going to overdo it, just like some people overdo alcohol and some people overdo drugs or exercise even. And there's no set of personality characteristics that defines who is prone to be addicted.
We have an email from Mary Ann. She writes, I feel this is a double-edged sword. My daughter is 4, and she learns so much from Sesame Street. It is amazing. Obviously, I read with her and teach her things, too, but without Sesame Street and other TV programs, I feel she would not have progressed so far.
Well, that's where the technology is beneficial.
How much is it generational? You know, when I was talking to Dr. Gary Smalley, he said that even he yells at his kids to get off that computer and come downstairs and watch television with me. and he agreed. We both grew up with people saying it's going to poison your mind. You know, you're going to rot. You know, your brain's going to rot if you watch too much TV.
Oh, yeah. I remember as a young teen lying on the couch for like 4 or 5 hours just staring at the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And
back when I was a teen and that was the case, there were only 3 channels.
Right. Me too. But at least, you know, with the internet, it's interactive.
Yeah.
So you're more involved.
So, Dr. Wallen, are there any studies out there that you are paying attention to that you think are worth looking at as they transpire?
Well, I have been impressed with the research of Drs. Larry Kuttner and Cheryl Olson on video games. They have found that, you know, a lot of studies on video games making people violent has a few methodological problems. First of all, they measure aggression right after the kid plays the video game and not like a week later. Also, statistically, violent crime has been on the decrease for the last 25 years, while video game use has increased. And so Drs. Kuttner and Olson, through Harvard University, their book is, I think, Grand Theft Childhood or something.
A play on Grand Theft Auto, the ultimate violent,
You know, found no causal relationship between playing video games and becoming violent. Now, if you're a violent person to begin with, if you have aggression problems and you play aggressive games, that doubles your risk, or I'm not sure if it's double, but increases your risk.
Mm-hmm.
So those, but the average kid playing some of these games, apparently they... The aggression settles down after a while, soon after they stop playing.
My guest is Dr. Pauline Wallin, psychologist and past president at the Media Psychology Division of the American Psychological Association. When we return, we're going to meet from a fellow who has written a book about his recovery from gaming addiction. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Neil Conan from Talk of the Nation and NPR News. Ohio's a very important swing state in the 2012 presidential election.
As always.
So important, in fact, that Ken Rudin and I will visit WOSU to host the Political Junkie Roadshow. Join us Wednesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. on the Ohio State campus for an evening of politics, punditry, and, of course,
trivia questions, and don't forget, T-shirts.
And a few bad jokes. Visit WOSU.org/politicaljunkie to register for this free event.
Bad jokes?
This is 89.7 NPR News. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, All Sides Weekend begins with host Marilyn Smith and a conversation about the best food and restaurants in Central Ohio. Join us for All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon. And it's 63 degrees with increasing clouds today. There is a chance of rain, but probably after 5 o'clock this evening, a high of 71 today. Rain for tonight, a low of 45 degrees. Expect some showers Saturday morning, then gradually becoming sunny and a high of 57. Cloud Saturday night and pretty chilly, a low of 38. Support for 89.7 comes from United Healthcare, helping companies realize the rewards of better health in the workplace. On the web at uhctoday.com/rewards. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about the psychological effects of technology. There has been a push in the psychology community to classify internet addiction as a treatable disorder similar to drug and alcohol addiction. Not everybody agrees with that, though. Here to talk about the ins and outs of virtual addiction is Kevin Roberts. He's a recovering gaming addict. Kevin now serves as an addiction counselor and is author of Cyber Junkie, Escape the Gaming and Internet Trap. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
It's great to be here, and I'm thrilled that people are paying such great attention to this issue.
You counsel a lot of parents and children in appropriate online habits. When dealing with internet use, how much is too much? What's good? What are good habits?
Well, I think what Dr. Wallin said, it's up to families to determine that for themselves. Different families are going to make different decisions. But I think that when you start to see an obsession, when you start to see a young person who's turning away from other activities, let's say it's the guitar or football or soccer, when you start to see see that that young person is not spending as much time with friends. When you see emotional disturbances, when you attempt to stop that young person from playing a game or being online, it might be time to start looking at the potential for a problem.
Maggie in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Maggie.
Hi. I have an observation and just a question. Our 7-year-old granddaughter spends one night a week with us, and she's ordinarily very sociable and happy when she wakes up in the morning. However, if I'm quite busy and I allow her to be on the computer briefly, and I'm not talking about hours, maybe 15 or 20 minutes, after her time on the computer, she does not interact with anybody at all.
Can you describe what you mean by not interacting?
Things like, would you like bacon and eggs for breakfast? No response. We've talked to her about it, and now it's and her mother told me the same thing just this week. She said, if I allow her to be on the computer, excuse me, after she's ready to go to school or daycare, she just doesn't talk. She's just silent. She's not unpleasant. She's just not there.
A study from the University of Bolton in the United Kingdom, funded by the British Psychological Society, that I think Dr. Small alluded to, that showed that certain people begin to exhibit traits that we might call Asperger's traits after they game or spend a significant amount of time on the computer, and we start to see antisocial behavior at a certain point with certain people, and we start to see a disengagement from social interaction. So there is some research to support that.
Dr. Wallen, any thoughts about that?
Well, I guess my first question would be, are you making eye contact with her?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Sometimes it's the antisocial, or I suppose it's antisocial behaviors, so extreme. I'll take her little face in my hand and say, did you hear what Grandma just said to you? And she just looks at me.
Wow.
No.
That's
interesting. I mean, it's she's otherwise an extremely bright, sociable, lovely little girl.
Have you started a dialogue with her, a conversation about this? Because I think that's really important that she, you know, you begin to help her have some consciousness about this tendency now, so that, you know, when it becomes a more serious problem, you've laid some groundwork there.
Well, I have. I suppose it's more a matter of the outcome being discipline, because I've said, you know, when you behave this way and you're really not being polite, you're not considering other people, I said that means you won't be on the computer. And, of course, she's not happy about that. And her mother had exactly the same experience with her just a few days ago and called me to tell me. And I said, well, what did you do about it? And she said, I told her she's not going to be on the computer in the morning again, that, you know, we can't have this. So it's more a discipline. I mean, we've talked to her about it, and she's very bright, so she certainly gets it.
Well, I would be really careful. I mean, you may not have a choice, but I would be careful you know, making it adversarial, because one of the things that happens with children when we restrict their access to technology like this, if we do it in too adversarial of a way, we kind of increase the payoff. Is there a way you could kind of get her to buy into this? That's what I would say, because, my goodness, a lot of the people that come to me with children who are excessive cyber users, whether computer or video games, were people who did restrict their children's computer use, and these technologies are so ubiquitous that if you restrict it, eventually they're going to be able to find it somewhere else. So just be really careful with that.
Okay.
Maggie, thanks for your call.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for your help.
Take care. Kevin Roberts, tell us how you're a former, you're a recovering addict. Not everybody agrees there's an actual addiction to it, that it's just a really, really bad habit. How do you distinguish between those two concepts?
Well, I was listening to a lot of what Dr. Wallen said, and I certainly agree with her. I think that we would do well to use the iceberg metaphor with cyber behaviors, that when you see somebody who's excessively gaming or excessively updating social media sites or internet sites, whatever, you're usually going to find some deeper issues going on. In my case, what was sending me to excessive amounts of time on computer games, I had anxiety that I wasn't dealing with. So there was an escapist aspect of it. Yet that behavior definitely did have addictive qualities to it. But I think it's different than, as Dr. Small pointed out, than, you know, cocaine or alcohol. You know, usually there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. When I get calls from parents around the country, and my call load is increasing every week, so often when people come to me, we find that eventually ADHD is playing a role. A lot of ADHD people, and there are a few studies that are starting to build up on this this aspect, but a lot of ADHD people have trouble with these amusements. So that is an example of, you know, don't just look at the gaming. Don't just view the gaming behavior, the internet behavior. Look deeper. Set your gaze deeper, because usually you'll find something else going on there. So while I agree that this can have significant addictive qualities, I don't want to get involved in that debate. But I think the danger is if we just settle on this as a sort of self-contained addiction that we're going to look at, we're going to miss a lot of the other deeper issues going on with that individual.
And when you bring up ADHD, having people with ADHD having trouble with it, you mean being more prone to using that kind of technology, gaming and so forth, because it people with ADHD tend to have higher levels of anxiety at times?
Well, certainly a lot of people. Mm-hmm.
Not all, but this, yeah.
A lot of people with this problem have anxiety. But mm-hmm. if we want to talk specifically about ADHD, ADHD is a condition of underactivity in certain regions of the brain. And to keep the brain stimulated, the ADHD individual, like myself, is constantly seeking out new forms of stimulation, simply as an unconscious attempt to keep the brain stimulated. Well, the internet and gaming offer that constant changing flow of somewhat intense and interesting stimulation that we ADHDers crave. So it making us particularly susceptible to excessive use of many of those amusements.
I think of seeking out that extra stimulation as something like when I'm listening to you, I'm doodling on a pad of paper. When you do something like get in a game and get involved in that, or get involved in social media to, you know, excessive degrees, you're not doing anything else. When you're doing that game, that's all you're doing.
That's right. It's not just a transient attempt mm-hmm. at increasing the intensity or the interest of a certain moment. It becomes an involved behavior that in many people starts to detract from other aspects of life, whether it's friends, family, activities, work. You know, I played 14,000 hours of computer games over 10 years. That's like having another job. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of things that I didn't do because I had my head buried in a computer screen playing games. One of the things that I always wanted to do was write books. And when I stopped, my first book was about my struggle and the struggles of people I work with. So, I mean, I think that's the tragedy. A lot of the people that get hooked on these, you know, in the cyber world are people who are creative. They're imaginative. They're people who have great ideas, but their great ideas get stuck in limbo because they're just doing unproductive things planted in front of a computer screen.
How did you figure out that you had a problem?
You know, I've had a lot of issues to deal with in my life, and I'm not going to get into my story. Mm-hmm. You can read that in my next book about ADHD, which just came out. But let's suffice it to say that I had a lot of friends, self-help circles, adult children of alcoholics, and friends of mine started to say that I might have a problem. And there was a friend of mine who I grew up with who was one of the only people I wasn't really successful at hiding this behavior from, and he kept pushing me. And one of the things that he was able to do to hook me into the narrative that he was, you know, creating about my behavior was he kept talking about, when are you going to write your first book? When are you going to write your first book? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And he appealed to that sense of, you know, I had these dreams that were being unfulfilled. And that created a cognitive dissonance in me, which eventually got me to look at the problem.
From your experience, are heavy users of the Internet more likely to become addicted to gaming and vice versa?
Please ask that question again.
Are heavy users of the Internet, which is much different than gaming, but people who are just on the Internet, watching every, you know, stupid kitten video on YouTube, you can't get off, are they more likely to become addicted to or have a establish a very bad habit of gaming?
I don't have any data on that, but I do know that in the people that I see, there tends to be a predisposition to one or the other. I think the other way around is true. People who game to excess are likely to be Internet users to excess. But there's a lot of people who are social media users, Internet users, who aren't necessarily into the gaming. However, there is a significant swath of the population of social media users that also does these applications. Farmville, I can't even name them, Cafe World, Cityville, and Mafia Wars. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily take to gaming, like a console game or a game on the computer, will do these applications, because these applications are really just simply a matter of click, 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 click. The more you click, the more successful you are. For most of these. So that's a tricky question, and I think we need a lot more research enable us to answer that effectively.
Both parents and children can find themselves in what you call the cyber trap of the Internet and gaming. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think we start out by just having fun. You know, when I was at the University of Michigan and I played my first game of Civilization, it was fun for a while, and it was a trap because I did not know that for whatever reason I was predisposed to really finding that game intensely exciting and satisfying. So I think the problem is that, and I'm really glad that this show is being aired and other shows like it, because people don't have awareness that simple act of gaming or that simple act of getting involved in Facebook in certain people could lead to an obsession, could lead to an excessive behavior that begins to detract from positive and beneficial aspects of one's life. So I just think there's I want to go back to something that Dr. Walden said. You know, there are intensely positive, wonderful things. She alluded to the surgeons who perform certain laparoscopic procedures 35% faster and 25% fewer mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
The battlefield interfaces that the U.S. military uses, you go into one of those bunkers where the Predator drones are being controlled, those people controlling them are video game adepts who are using interfaces that look very much like video games. Also, IBM and many corporations around the United States are using, and the world, are using massively multiplayer online role-playing games to teach leadership skills and cooperation. So, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation last year gave $20 million to develop educational games. George Lucas's Edutopia, it gives millions every year. So I think we're moving in that direction. And the people who have a predisposition toward video games, toward the Internet, these are people with remarkable skills, remarkable abilities. But what we have to do as parents and professionals is we have to make sure that these young people are developing those skills so they come out armed for a bright future instead of wasting their life sedentarily in front of a computer screen. So we have to make sure they get the benefits and that we minimize the negatives.
You know, going back to the call we had earlier about the grandmother and her 7-year-old granddaughter, is there any kind of obligation, or would it be helpful to start educating children about how to use these technologies in a fruitful and fun way without doing harm? Are kids able to learn about things like that? We teach them first aid. We teach them about don't use drugs. We teach them a lot of stuff in schools. Is this something they should learn about?
Oh, and absolutely. And I've written numerous articles on this topic, and I'll tell you something, and I want to really highlight this point. You've got to be careful as a parent that you don't increase the value and the prestige of video games and the internet. And one great way to do this is if you're a parent and you want to teach that lesson to your child, you as the parent, you start playing too many video games. You start staying on the computer for a week or two and let your child notice that and begin the discussion with your child being involved in the discussion. Because I got to tell you, I've said it before, so many people that come to me are people who did regulate, who did restrict their child's internet usage, and then their children, when they go and they get into teen years or when they get into college, these are often the kids who really go crazy because, you know, they've wanted it, it's been restricted, it's only increased the desire. So you have to be really careful.
Kind of the forbidden, kind of like the forbidden fruit problem.
Yeah, and, you know, it's everywhere. You know, the kids at school have the iPod, they have the iPad, they've got the new technology, they've got the new phone, they've got the new video game system, you know, and children covet these things. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I remember coveting my friend Andy Donaldson because he had the Star Wars action figures, and my mom wouldn't buy them for me. Well, now children are coveting technology. You know, they want the new computer, they want the new that, and what they want now, 3 months from now, they won't be satisfied with it because something new has come out. So they're sort of, you know, also trapped by this increasing pace of technology. So you've got to have these discussions with them when they're young. And as parents, you can't just watch your kids on the internet or on video games. You have to play them too. You have to use the computer too so that you're up on it. Because I'll tell you, when they become teenagers, and you want to monitor them, they are masters of espionage and deception.
Real quickly, we run out of time, but what about putting that computer in the bedroom issue? Thumbs up, thumbs down, it depends?
I mean, it all depends. It's on a case-by-case basis. But certainly, if you go to Family Safe Media, Family Safe Media, they've got a great website with internet control, parental control software. They've got plugs that you can plug your machines into. Listen, I'm going to tell you this, and this is probably the most important thing I've said. Parents struggle with children, especially teenagers, to find motivating potential. The most powerful motivating carrot that parents have at their disposal is technology. So you as parents must use technology. It's better that you link target behaviors with the use of technology than take them away. It's better that you link them with these, because the problem is children feel entitled to these technological amusements. You must make them a privilege and use them to motivate your children to have a balanced and productive life.
Thank you, Kevin Roberts, for joining us.
It is my pleasure, and thank you so much for covering this topic, because it's one of my missions in life. I really appreciate you.
Kevin Roberts, author of Cyber Junkie, Escape the Gaming and Internet Trap. Also, Dr. Pauline Wallin, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks for listening. Thanks to All Sides production assistant Rachel Ramey for producing this show. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com.